This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Peter, for a very impressive presentation. Thank God the PowerPoint didn't break down. We've got a panel discussion, which, again, will be a kind of springboard, I hope, for you to be able to make some points yourself from the floor. Two speakers on my immediate right, Derek Williams, who's chief executive of the WOW Awards, and on my further right, Dr. Julie Weimer, who is head of strategic and policy development for Bedfordshire Police Authority, my area. Each of them has been asked to speak for maximum of 5 minutes, and if you can make it 4 minutes, that'll be even better without gabbling.
From the podium?
Speak from here, I think it's a lot easier. So, Derek, you go first.
Yes, very interesting to see Peter's charts and graphs. I'm afraid I don't have anything nearly as sophisticated as that for you, but I also picked up on one little thing that Linda King-Taylor mentioned in her presentation, which was let your customers contribute. And what we've been working on in the last 8 months with Merseyside Police is a programme called the WOW Awards, which is all around members of the public nominating police officers who have given them exceptional customer service. And I think that one of the problems in management generally, not specifically the police force, and bear in mind I'm not a member of the police force in any way, but I think for too long we've focused on the negatives and catching people doing things wrong. And we actually need to turn that around a little and focus some time and energy on catching people doing things right. And one of the things that I do when I come to my office each morning is I switch my laptop on and I see the latest nominations that are coming in from members of the public for Merseyside Police. And when we get contributions, for instance, from a young lad at primary school nominating Robbie the Bobby, and the nomination simply read, I like Robbie the Bobby because he comes to my school, then for me that's a very clear indication that Robbie the Bobby is reaching out to his customers and making an impact. So I think that there is an opportunity not just to look at the facts and the figures and the statistics, but actually to reach out to our communities and ask them, what is it that we're doing right? What is it that you really like, and how can we do more of that? And not only is that motivating for our individuals, it also gives management a line of information that they may not have had access to before. We often have very refined and perfected complaint systems, but very few organisations have any sort of system for collecting compliments.
Thank you. Well, that was very concise. Thank you very much. Julie.
Okay, thank you. Well, I guess it wouldn't be complete without a view from a police authority, given that this session is called Accountability and Responsibility, and particularly because police authorities are the tripartite partner that's invested with the role of holding the local police force to account for delivering an efficient and effective service. I don't know what many of you know about Bedfordshire, but it's one of the smallest police forces in the country. It's very rural, but we have a number of metropolitan issues that have to be policed. And I think it's not easy for any police authority, and ours in particular, to understand clearly what our role is in helping to create trust and confidence in our communities, and particularly with police authorities, because of course they are strategic bodies as opposed to operational bodies, and therefore we don't immediately deliver a direct service. But your police authority should be there as your link between the community and the police. And if we get our role as the public watchdog right, then we ought to be able to increase trust and confidence, not only in the police force itself, but also within our local communities. We know that research around confidence shows that it's beneficial for both organisations and individuals to have high levels of trust. And if we can create that, then when we have to make some of those unpalatable decisions, hopefully we will be given the benefit of the doubt by our community. So in my experience, I think there's three key ingredients that the police authority particularly needs to create some level of confidence and trust. And I would say that they are responsibility, accountability, and transparency, something that I don't think we've heard much about today. But the police authority is responsible for securing the outcomes that make a difference to our local communities. And actually, we're very well aware of our responsibilities in terms of making the most of our efficient, effective, and economic use of resources. In Bedfordshire, over the last 2 years, the authority has been very instrumental in driving up performance by particularly focusing on reducing our sickness rates, which were quite high. We've spent a lot of time and energy talking, negotiating, and finally collaborating with a neighbouring force to now have a joint major crime unit. The impact of that has been to significantly reduce our abstraction rates from neighbourhood policing teams on the ground. And equally, we've been capped or nominated because we went over the limit last year on capping to put more investment into having some frontline police officers. So I think that one of the interesting things and one of the points that came out this morning from the local authority is that Ipsos Mori is actually saying that one of the things that drive confidence is value for money. And I think I would argue that most of your police authorities are driving out efficiencies and securing value for money for the local communities. Because we have responsibility, yes, it's right that we're held to account, and it's currently the top political hot potato at the moment. But there are lots of new accountabilities now being brought in, and I think as modern policing becomes more complex, we need different forms and different levels of accountability, and we need to be clear who is accountable to who and for what. Most police authorities now are coming under the inspection regime, something that we haven't had in the past. But clearly all of those organisations that become subject to inspection, it focuses the mind and it drives the organisation to up their game. So I think it's something that police authorities will welcome. Similarly, we have new performance frameworks in terms of the new comprehensive area assessment. Again, partners in there will be assessed against performance. Local authority overview and scrutiny committees now coming online. Again, another mechanism with which to hold both local police and the police authority to account. And equally, we have the media, who also hold the police to account. However, as we all know, media messages can distort, and the public demand does not always reflect public need. And I think the police authority has a very important role there in making sure that it's not only what the public is interested in, but it's what is in the public interest. So I think we have a key role in managing public expectations. It is the case that the public will need to understand that some of their priorities are either untenable or unrealistic. And given the current economic climate, difficult budgetary decisions will now have to be made. And as has already been spoken about this morning, there will continue to be that tension between providing the protective services and providing neighbourhood policing. Because we need to be transparent, we need to have those dialogues with our communities. We do need to be open and transparent, more so, and we can do more around that. But as we all know, with the recent MP's scandal of expenses, if things are done behind closed doors, you very quickly lose the trust and confidence in your organisation. So just quickly to conclude, I think that for the organisation as a whole, responsibility, accountability and transparency has to add up in some way to improving public confidence.
Thank you very much indeed, Julie, and before that, you as well. Well, we've got about 15 minutes or so for discussion, and I'd very much like to, you know, encourage as many people who've sat, you know, quite patiently through the day and through the breakout sessions. Maybe you contributed in those, maybe you didn't, but this is an opportunity really to pick up some of the points that we've heard in this session. It's the same ground rules as this morning. We've got the two roving mics, so if you can wait for a mic to reach you before saying your piece, then we'll go ahead. Who wants to kick off on anything we've heard in this session? You're obviously all totally exhausted from...
It gets us back on time, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does, yes. There's a gentleman there. Okay, I was going to ask a question.
My name's Tom Kelly. I'm from Merseyside Police Authority. I'm an independent member of the authority. Just in terms of the actual confidence figure and the improvements that were made, there was a comment really from this morning to some extent, and the 5% increase on Merseyside, the I think it's about 7 or 8% increase. But what's happened within the last 6 months, that sort of has plateaued out. And I don't know if it's true of all forces, but certainly on Merseyside's case, we've hit 57% 6 months ago, and that curve that was going up has started going in a straight line. And I just wonder whether or not there's any opinion in relation to that, that this plateauing out after all of the activity that's happened over the last year, that obviously we need reasons for why we've had the increases, but we also might need some reasons around or some reality checks around the plateauing out of this figure. And I just wonder if there's any comments on that.
Can I use that just as an opportunity to maybe take a straw poll? I mean, one of the many things in Peter's presentation that struck me was this need to go beyond the headline figure, the confidence figure, and ask, you know, what has happened in the last year to affect your confidence in the police. Lancashire do that. How many other forces actually do that as part of their own surveying research? So a number, but possibly not the majority of forces by any means. But Peter, do you want to pick up that point about, is it expected that this might plateau out, this confidence figure?
I think the reality is we don't know. I think you've answered your own question, really. It's encouraging that there's a desire to scrutinise apparent success, because that's not what normally characterises performance regimes. We're obsessed with the reds, and we glory in the greens and never scrutinise the greens. But that's effectively what you're saying, is we really need to have a better handle on what caused this apparent success to happen. And I think the bald reality is we don't know. So that needs to be grounded back in activity, not only in Merseyside, but across all 43 police forces. The Home Office have been reluctant to compare and contrast different force levels. It's worth reflecting on where the numbers come from. They come from the British Crime Survey. The British Crime Survey uses something called cluster sampling for the anoraks in the room, which means your respondents won't necessarily be evenly spread across your force area. So it might be, so far, the clusters have fallen in the more pro-police parts of Merseyside, and later on in the survey they might fall in the less pro-police, presuming there are such places, the less pro-police parts of Merseyside. So it wouldn't surprise me if period on period we do see some volatility in the British Crime Survey figure. I'm slightly surprised it's moved by as much as it had. It's an unprecedented increase in a British Crime Survey question. Now, some of that I suspect we can put down to national publicity. It clearly is on the agenda. But I'm speculating. I don't know that it's down to that national publicity. But what is interesting is, as Mrs. Spence said this morning, I think it was Mrs. Spence, the satisfaction, as judged by a British Crime Survey, has also shown an increase. So something's causing that to happen. Something's causing improvement in British Crime Survey-derived measures. The qualification I place on that is that lots of forces show significant increases in their local satisfaction surveys. So again, we've got this dilemma. How do we reconcile the local assessments with the national assessment? I know I'm not answering your question, but I'm sort of filibustering
well,
the time.
You're doing a good... Yeah, well, which American politician was it who said it's the unknown knowns or what we don't know?
Rumsfeld.
Whatever, I won't start on that. But anyway, so we don't know as much as we do. Lynbert Spencer, and then gentleman on the table in the middle there.
Yes, a question stroke comment, but which might also be a part answer to the previous question. Yeah. Again, picking up on something that that Julie hinted at or said directly this morning, and that is, in the case of Lancashire, for instance, who are the 30% who didn't answer yes or agree or strongly agree? Because the more we can find out about who they are, the clearer we can be about the extent to which we have plateaued in relation to the others. Because it may well be that we are already hitting 90% of particular parts of the community, but failing to impress 90% of other parts of the community. So it may well be that we've reached or nearly reached as far as we can go with the analysing who the 70% are, or the 57% if we're talking about Merseyside, and need to start asking some of those other questions that you intimated of the ones who do not agree or strongly disagree.
Yeah,
who are they?
That's a very interesting point. Has anyone got any more thoughts on this particular point? Is your question related to this point, or is it something slightly different? No more thoughts on that point. Okay.
Well, that's where our questions come from, exactly that. What I haven't done is segment the responses by different communities or different people, but that's available. I mean, the reality at the moment is we're dealing with issues in far more generic terms, because there's some generic issues we need to get right first before we start segmenting the data, but the data are there.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Mike's behind you.
I found it very helpful with Peter saying that what this is really about is really improving the service to the public, as opposed to, you know, satisfaction and confidence being an end in itself. What I'd be quite interested to know is how we can use the performance culture to actually change the hearts and minds of our frontline officers, so that we get real improvement in performance and avoid some of the pitfalls where some of our performance measures can actually pervert the way we do policing on the streets. And it would be interesting to know some thoughts on that.
Which do you have any particular performance measures in mind?
Well, obviously, it's really just, I mean, traditionally we've been very numerical targets, and those numerical targets and our pursuit of those numerical targets become more important than actually the service. So there's lots of examples, but the best, easiest example to explain is like our call handling targets to say we must hit, say, 85% of our priorities within an hour. What that could lead to is when we've missed one of our priorities, we send the next available resource to the second priority to make sure we achieve that, and the one we've missed ends up having to wait several hours before an officer's deployed. So it looks as though we're doing better, but we're not in fact. It's what I call perceived performance as opposed to real performance.
Yeah, that was a point I think came up at one of the seminars this morning. Anybody who has any thoughts on that point, especially about how you get the people on the front line? I mean, assuming that the leadership is there and from people at the top like Julie Spence, the message is being pushed down, but how do you actually inculcate that? Well, Julie, since I've mentioned you.
I think there's something about stories, and I think it's around looking at both satisfied and dissatisfied customers, if you like, for want of a better word. Because we had a really good example of, and we spoke to somebody who was really dissatisfied with the service we'd given, and yet on the surface, the officer who investigated it would have been patting himself on the back, and it might have been herself actually, but patting themselves on the back because they had detected it, it had gone to court, they got a conviction. But the member of the public, when they were surveyed by SWIFT, were absolutely dissatisfied because they'd never been told. So all the good work that the officer had done, the detection that we had, the percentage increase that we had as a result of it, all the TICs went for a ball of chalk because we hadn't had a conversation with a member of the public. And I think that's actually where we have got to get into if we want to raise our level of service delivery so that people understand that what they do or what they don't do has consequences. And similarly, the success stories, it's about really going from what you said about identifying all the positive stuff that's going on and saying this is what good looks like. And good, you can actually have, and one of my detectives talks about it to superintendents, is that you can actually rescue what would be a poor investigation by doing action and telling people what you've actually done, and confidence goes up. So actually, detection sometimes equals success in the public's eyes, but sometimes it equals dissatisfaction if you don't get all the bases covered. And it's those sorts of stories that starts to change behaviour and deliver service improvement. Sorry, that's a lemon sherbet.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Derek.
I'd just like to make the comment that across a broad spectrum of sectors, public sector, private sector, and all sorts of industries, often what we do is motivate people to do the wrong things. And this is, for instance, very often why if you call a call centre, if your call is of a difficult or an intricate nature, the handler will hang up, because in hanging up they achieve their target. So I think that ultimately we need to actually give more responsibility to our customers and ask our customers to identify what it is that we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. Because otherwise we could well hit all of the targets that you're aiming for and still have a very dissatisfied customer base.
I just wondered if I could connect this point to what Julie was saying about transparency. And also Peter said, I think it was Peter, referred to elected police commissioners and maybe some chief constables, or maybe it was Linda, some chief constables are in favour, but, you know, and we know that there's been, you know, a warning from the ACPO president that many chief constables would actually resign if the Conservatives go ahead with their promise to introduce elected police commissioners. The reason I mention it is that not one way in which the public can feel that they do have a voice over policing? If it's true that people feel that they've been consulted to death or whatever, and the police will listen to them, but they will still go ahead and do what they've always done, is that not one way of ensuring that that voice is heard? I don't know whether people, you know, how many people here actually think that elected police commissioners, whether you would vote Tory or not, is a good idea or not? Well, one. So it's obviously not a terribly popular idea. I don't know whether that means that the rest of you are against it, or from what Limbert was saying, we need to know an awful lot more, actually, about why you don't want to put your hands up. But I prevented Peter, I think, from coming in on the point that was raised there.
One observation I would make is that why do we continue to separate performance from the consideration of quality? And why isn't the consideration of quality part of our conception of performance? And that's what we aspire to in my organisation. We don't have this parallel universe of crime reduction, crime investigations and satisfaction. They're all part of our consideration of performance. Now, whether we do that effectively is a moot point. That leads us into how we reward and recognise, which is the point that was being made to my right in different language. We reward and we recognise the wrong things. And that's also reinforced in the external assessment frameworks. It's very tempting to have a dig at HMIC. I will resist the opportunity to have a dig at HMIC, but the rounded assessment, which was mooted for reporting roundabout now, didn't appear to be very rounded. And the key thing, I think, in what you're saying is we need to strike the appropriate balance in coming to judgments about what is and what isn't good, bad or indifferent performance. And at the moment, they're skewed, largely skewed, in favour of the things that are easily measured. We also got to recognise that we've created a generation of police officers and managers that are very, very comfortable with that. And weaning them off it will not be easy. You know, managers, supervisors actually like the targets because it makes the conversation straightforward. I'm not criticising them for that. That's just what we as a service have created.
Well, anyone have a view on that? I mean, there is one force I was reading recently, which I think is the West Midlands force, seemed to be kind of bucking the trend in terms of doing things far more informally in terms of dealings with the public and dealing with cautions and stuff like that, and not actually taking people through a lot of the formal mechanisms. If they can do that and apparently achieve quite a high customer satisfaction level, why can't other forces do that? Or do they feel totally shackled by the rules? Anyone from West Midlands? Yeah. Well, have you noticed that your force is actually doing something totally different from it used to?
Well, on my own command unit, which is Wolverhampton, we're resolving informally about
8 to 9% of cases, and that, and certainly officers are telling me over the last 6 to 8 weeks that that is now starting to create differences for them in terms of freeing up time. And interestingly enough, the latest round of internal West Midlands, what we call the Field of Difference survey, the latest wave for our area has gone up from an 80% to an 88% satisfaction level. And I know, I do accept the difference between satisfaction and confidence.
Yeah.
But there is, I would say, a statistically significant connection between the two. So, yeah, I think we are doing something different. And we are trying to reassure officers that, you know, things done in good faith, which is a message that's been preached for a long time, will not be penalised. In fact, they'll be encouraged. And we are successfully moving away from what I was describing to a colleague earlier as, oh, my goodness, it's the 30th of the month, I need a prisoner. And, you know, we have got away from that. Mm. It certainly helps me in the tasking process. So, yes, I think we are doing some things different. But it's not just been a snap of the fingers. It's been a move towards that rather than an overnight sort of road to Damascus.
Yeah, well, interesting point, but it is a culture shift within the force. There's a gentleman at the back there, I think.
Yeah, Alan Doherty, Divisional Commander from Bradford in West Yorkshire. We're going through the QUEST process, which is a process that a lot of forces in the country either are going through or have been through. And QUEST certainly encourages forces to deal with things in the manner that you've just described. So, you know, rather than take 6 juveniles through the custody suite and interview all the lot and go through the processes for a criminal damage that just can't be detected and prosecuted, QUEST gives you that discretion really to deal with it more informally at the time, leading to more improved confidence and satisfaction levels from the victim without clogging up custody areas with a no-hope case.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Is there someone over there? Yeah. We're sort of coming to the end of this session, but
yeah,
please go
ahead. It's Nick Baker from Staffordshire Police. It's just to reinforce what Piers said for the West Midlands, that we've gone the same way. That it's called the Trust and Confidence Strategy, which is to get down to 10 performance indicators. I think it's almost, but there is, I think, a requirement to perhaps get a national understanding of what performance is required from the police, because it does come with risk. You use discretion, it has an impact on your overall detection rate. And it's understanding that what you can't have is a situation where you're actually going to focus on delivering what the community needs, and then there's a potential punishment for reducing detection rates. And it's just that sort of understanding that it does come at times with a risk.
So perhaps, dare I say, we need a Royal Commission on policing to actually sort some of these things out. Anyone else have a burning sense of injustice if I close the session now and we'll move to the seminars? Very briefly, Julie. You can probably be heard from there. But
it's very much on the last point, really, and I think there is a debate to be had. One, it's about HMIC and what the police performance group is going to look like. I think there's some chiefs in the sidelines worried, but there is a bigger debate around disposals and making sure we get the right disposals. I actually think that the work that West Mid staffs and the two other forces, Surrey and Leicestershire, are actually doing is absolutely top draw, and others are trying to emulate it, but it's about making sure we get the right disposal for the right crime, because there's also debates at the other end when there have been inappropriate cautions or fixed penalty notices actually used. And so we're in the currently juxtaposed in a very difficult debate, but we need to get it right because it is at the root of confidence, because some people don't think we're hard enough and some people think we're too hard. So an interesting debate to be had, but there is definitely more mileage in the RJ approach, restorative justice.
All right, you're waving frantically there, so I'll let you just say a couple of quick words.
It's just one very final point around this issue around discretion and all the rest of it, and that's that it's great to have this message around discretion, but it has to be accompanied by a very, very strong message around diversity and treating people the same, because it would be awful if discretion was exercised in relation to how somebody looked or what sort of social background they came from.
Sure, thank you. I realised late in the day I opened up a whole new sort of area there, but it was interesting to get the view from West Midlands. OK, can I ask for a round of applause for all of our speakers in this session?